You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarlane. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Hey, welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes, and I'm joined, of course, by Trish McFarlane. Trish, what's happening?
Good morning, Steve Bowes. How are you?
I am fantastic. I feel like $100, I have to say.
You always feel like $100. When are we going to feel like more? What does it take?
I don't know.
That's a new show. You know, what does it take incentive-wise or compensation-wise, I don't know, something to make you feel like more than $100?
$100 is still pretty good, though. It's so funny. Like, we're moved to, like, sort of, you know, cashless kind of existence for the most part, right? We don't carry around as much cash as we used to. We don't buy things for cash as often.
Right.
So when you get a crisp $100, like, you go to Vegas and you hit the ATM, and you want to withdraw $100, right? And it comes out as one crisp $100 bill. That's still...
That's how you feel?
That's still pretty cool. Yeah, I think that's
good. All right. Hey, so, I like a good $100 bill. That's, you know, it's a good thing.
Hey, it is a good thing. So great to be back on the show. It's been a little while. We've had a crazy month of June. Absolutely crazy. Both of us, both some things we did at the same time, some things we did separately. Wow, I can't believe June is over and it's already July and we're recording this. And June has passed us by.
Right, but the good news is that we have so many other shows on HR Happy Hour Network that people haven't probably missed it at all, right?
Let's hope not. I hope they missed it some. But great to be back with you, Trish, of course. Real quick, one of the things we did in June I wanted to mention, and we'll circle back to this on a future show in the next couple of weeks. We'll dive into it in a little bit more detail, but I did want to mention the HR Tech China event that we both attended in Shanghai the first week of June. And phenomenally interesting and fun event. It's our second event we've done over in China, and the second time we've both been there as well. And super event. We had 3,500 plus attendees, 60 plus exhibitors, 2 days in Shanghai in one of the most iconic locations. If you've ever seen those pictures of the Shanghai skyline, we were in one of those buildings that's in every one of those pictures, which was loads of fun. I had a great time in China, and it wasn't just about having a great time, but it was about engaging with and learning about what's happening in an incredibly interesting and dynamic country. Just a couple quick stats I'll throw out, Trish, and then you can maybe share a comment or two about China. 700 million people in the workforce in China. 700 million. That's like five times the amount here in the U.S. About 25 million enterprises and still 30% growth rates in most sectors. So an incredibly dynamic, interesting, optimistic kind of a place, and fantastic time there. And we'll talk more about that later on, but I just wanted to mention that real quick and say thanks to everybody who made that event possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you to LRP and China Star for helping me come over and be a keynote there. It's obviously great to go to China. I mean, you know, on a personal level, learning and getting to speak with so many different people that I normally, you know, wouldn't come into contact with here. But also, like you mentioned, from a workforce perspective, they're just so huge, and the business considerations are quite a bit different. And I think, you know, for all the similarities that are there and that exist, being able to see those nuances firsthand is absolutely eye-opening. So, yeah, we definitely need to follow up with a show specifically about the China trip and some of the different technologies and how some might be more advanced and some might be, you know, a little bit behind, but interesting comparison on all fronts.
Yeah, so fantastic event. Great to be there. And lots of other things happened since then, but we're back. We're back on the HR Happy Hour Show. We thought, Trish, and you sort of, I thought for sure, and I think I can.
You thought and I agreed maybe. How about that?
I worked on you for a while, but to try a new thing, especially in summertime when it's a little bit slower and the pace has slowed down just a touch maybe. Like, I think my inbox is not quite as blown up as it normally is this time of year. It's July 4th week, so we thought we'd try something fun this week on the show, which is the Workplace Movie Hall of Fame podcast. So everybody knows their favorite movie that's has a workplace theme, whether it's, you know, 9 to 5 or Up in the Air or Office Space, right? There, and there's loads of them, right? Everybody's got their favorites and the ones they,
right,
they find most interesting or fun or relevant to even today's workplace. So we thought we would pick from time to time on the pod here, we would pick a workplace movie, and we'd both watch it, which we did, and then break it down a little bit, and then also talk a little bit about, no, not just the movie itself. This isn't like a movie review show, but more about the themes in the particular film and how they still resonate today and how we're seeing them in the workplaces in technologies of today. So that's the kind of the idea. It's the first one, so we'll see how this evolves and develops, and maybe we'll do a whole bunch of these. Maybe we won't do many of them at all, but we're going to try to do one today. And so thank you for bearing with us and listening in. Hope you like it, and let us know, of course, if you do or if you don't. And with that, Trish, will you like to introduce our first movie that we're going to take on in the Workplace Movie
Hall of Fame? Can I do that?
Series? Please do.
So obviously you mentioned a few that seem very obviously workplace related, right? And we had talked about doing Up in the Air as our first one, which oddly was filmed here in St. Louis. And when Mr. George Clooney was here in town several years ago filming that, I was able to see him in person at a bar, which was not a very good thing to do. But at any rate, I can explain more whenever we get to that movie. But so over the 4th of July holiday, we had the pleasure of having you visit us here in the St. Louis area. And my whole family, I mean, extended family and everything, love Steve Bowes. So
who doesn't really? But go ahead.
Exactly, right? But getting you to be here and spending time with the family. So one of the things we did was to take Steve to the lake because we love the boat. We love going out on the lake. And so we thought that would be a great thing to do. And in the car on the way down, I have very few DVDs that I still own because that's sort of a relic of the past. But one of the DVDs I had in the car for the children to watch was Mr. Mom. And I would have probably not thought of that as a workplace movie, but I think within a minute of starting it, you and I both just like the light bulbs went off, right? That
right.
This is actually a movie that has quite a bit to do with the workplace. And I love how you kind of said earlier about, you know, things still being relevant or not. It really tells you maybe how much has changed, but how much hasn't changed
right.
in the years since Mr. Mom came out. So do you want to maybe talk a little bit about, you know, when it came out and some of the factoids behind that, and then we can dive into several of the big workplace themes that
yeah,
that movie
let's do it.
Really talks about and covers. It was sure. really interesting, and I loved listening to it. The two times we had to watch it, right, on the way to the lake
right.
so we had one child, and on the way back from the lake with the other child.
Yeah, we swapped out the kids in the back seat, so we got to watch it twice.
Mr. Mom.
Yeah, for folks who don't remember or don't know, I can't believe anybody wouldn't know this movie, but who maybe don't recall it. Mr. Mom came out in 1983, starred Michael Keaton, Terry Garr, and Martin Mull. They were the three main actors. Also a small role for Jeffrey Tambor, who was really good in this movie as well. This movie came out in 83, and this I didn't know, Trish. It made about $100 million combined box office and rental income, because right, in 83, rental thing was really big. And it was the eighth highest grossing movie of 1983. So this was a big hit, very popular.
And you know what? I wonder what that would equate to today, because you know it would be considerably more.
Oh, sure. I'll bet.
You know what I mean? Like it's
35
hard to,
years ago, right? Yeah.
Maybe as we're talking, you can look that up. Like what would $100 million in 83 be equal to? I'm going to guess maybe double.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe not that much, but, you know, maybe. So you're right. Definitely a hit at the time. I think, too, the fact of with a movie like that, even if people have seen it, they probably haven't seen it in years and maybe only remember a few parts.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it, like
yeah.
now, as an adult.
Yeah,
I really related to Michael Keaton a lot, right?
Oh, I do too. Let me give you just a quick two sentences on the plot. After Michael Keaton, he is the dad in the movie, or becomes Mr. Mom. After he's laid off from his job as an engineer at an auto plant, he switches roles with his wife, Terry Garr. She returns to the workforce, and he becomes a stay-at-home dad, a job he has no clue how to do. And so the movie basically then takes us through what happens with him and his struggles with running a household and three small children and not knowing how to do anything. And her struggles, a completely different set of struggles of re-entering the work workplace, and as we'll talk about here in a second, dealing with a lot of hostility and harassment and issues herself. So that's the basic theme of the movie, and really funny movie as well. And it's got some classic lines and just a great, eminently rewatchable movie as well. So if you happen to stumble upon this on cable TV one evening, it's a great movie to stick on for an hour. And real tight running time of like an hour and 30 minutes, right, in and out. So,
oh, right. Yeah. Okay, so I looked it up, Steve. A dollar in 1983 would be have the same buying power as $2.47 wow. today.
Wow.
So there you go, about 2.5 million, I mean, $200 million dollars, over $200 million.
Yeah, huge movie. So,
okay.
So big themes, Trish. I think the first one, right, of Mr. Mama, obviously, is just, you know, the changing roles, right? In the movie, they change roles, right? In the time, 1983,
right,
men went to work and tried to provide for the family. Women, in a much greater proportion than today, stayed home and looked after the house, right? That was just how life was. I mean, you and I were little older. We weren't little kids in the 80s, but we were kids, and I think both of us grew up in that manner, right? Like, our families were very traditional,
absolutely.
Right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's true. A lot of moms did still stay home with raising children at that time. And I was looking sort of in anticipation of this. The most current stats that I was able to find for now is that 2/3 of households that have children have two working spouses right
wow.
now. So it's definitely changed. It's much more common to have both your parents work than to not have one or the other at home. So definitely a big change.
Yeah, and it's changed quite a bit. And so the tension that starts, right, both at home and at work for these folks when their gender roles, their traditional gender roles reverse, becomes kind of the tension point, right, throughout the entire movie. And while it's played for laughs, particularly with Michael Keaton, you know, taking the iron to, you know, heat up the grilled cheese and not knowing how to vacuum and all the little hijinks that get on. But it's actually a real serious thing. As the movie goes on, that sort of the undertone of it is Keaton is kind of feels like he's losing what he believes anyway, and what a lot of men then believe, and still probably many do today, that their essential, I don't know, value as a man, as a father, is that I've got to contribute, I've got to earn and provide.
Right. I think, you know what, I think that's true. And also the fact that, you know, it's probably not unique to the male either, but each person sort of has a role in mind of how they think their life is going to be. And so, for example, on the flip side, as a mother or a woman growing up who ultimately became a mother, you know, I sort of had a stay-at-home mom. So I saw that was the way they are, right?
Right.
And everyone before her was a stay-at-home mom. And so for me to try and become anything different, it's really challenging because you don't necessarily have a role model to see what that should look like. And maybe, you know, women who wind up in the working world, not even as a primary breadwinner, but just as a contributing breadwinner or the primary, you sort of start looking to men in your life as those role models for how your work should be. And I wonder, probably if we dug into this, you know, even more depth, you'd find that maybe it's starting to lead women to be more disconnected to their child. But that could also be very positive for the child, because maybe that's the time that men get to start, you know, sort of stepping into that relationship role more tightly than they were when you and I were growing up. So it opens up a whole can of worms, right, on all fronts.
Yeah, and some data that I found as we were thinking about the show was, this data is a couple years old, but some Pew Social Trends research from the Pew Internet group, which has always had some really interesting survey data, they're saying around 40% of U.S. households are led, quote unquote, by women, either single moms or married moms, you know, married women in marriages who are the primary earner or breadwinner. So, I mean, and that's about four-year-old data showing about 40. So that Mr. Mom scenario, which was so novel and awkward to the point, not awkward maybe, but so unusual that we could make a whole movie about it and coin a phrase, right, called Mr. Mom, like that, oh, my God, Michael Keaton has to stay home with the kids. Not so crazy today, right? Not so unusual, right? Even though it's still maybe probably not the primary way families are set up in the U.S., but not crazy at all anymore. And I wonder over time if what that really means, right? We know how we grew up and the kind of the role models we had and the family life we had. And now, you know, our kids see something completely different.
Well, I think, too, we're in the middle of this cycle, so we don't know yet, right? So that the generation that we're a part of are the first ones doing this sort of either female-led household or both parents working, if it's a, you know, a dual income household. But either way, the result are our children. And so we don't know what that's going to do to them. Will it make the males better parents? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Will it make the women less involved? Maybe, maybe not, right? There are all these questions that we'll see playing out probably here in the next 20 years and how that changes in the workplace. But what I do think is so interesting about all of that is that as we're thinking about how human resources runs within an organization or even into the technology, right? That could have a huge impact. And I just wonder, are we really spending enough time thinking about those implications? Yeah. I don't think we are. I don't think this is getting to, at least, look, you and I are pretty involved in the HCM space. We're not hearing a lot being talked about on this particular topic. So even though we sort of stumbled back into it in a very unusual way, I think there, it just, it would be very important for us to be mindful about this as we're thinking about
policies.
Procedures and technology and all those aspects,
yeah,
right?
And I think the other thing, and I agree, Trisha, with you 100% on that, and I think the other thing that comes up in this movie quite a bit and we don't think about or talk about enough in workplaces is the importance of childcare to families and to employees, right? So you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, two-thirds of households with children have both parents in the workforce, right, to some level. Two-thirds, that's tremendous. I don't know what I should, you know, maybe I'll dig it up before we post the show. I don't know what the stats were like in 1983 when this movie came out, what that number was. But my sense is it's much lower. And you can see that even in the movie because the movie is always kind of about a choice between him working or her working. There's never really there's never really a realistic outcome that's, well, they're both going to work, right? That never really even comes up. It's not even hinted at. And whereas today, two-thirds of folks, that's just a normal way of life. But, I mean, just in the news, and we can probably move on to sort of the other topic we wanted to talk about here in a second. But the other really big piece of news I remember reading about, it's a little unrelated, but I'll tie it back in, is Apple Computer, right? Building their giant new campus out in Silicon Valley, right? This amazing spaceship campus, which has just opened up recently. One of the things Apple's gotten pushed on about is they didn't build any childcare facilities on site in this enormous, modern, multi-billion-dollar building. No childcare facilities at all. And that's a decision. That's an organizational decision. And they certainly, and many companies would love to have childcare facilities on site. They just don't have the means to do it or the resources or they're just not set up in a way that would make sense. For a company like Apple, with basically endless and unlimited resources, could do whatever they want. They certainly could have put childcare on site and they didn't. And I think that's really, really interesting. It's maybe a show for another day about why or why not that matters to employees and the kinds of people who are going to work in your organization in their life outside of work. But I find that very interesting.
I agree that you're right. It could be probably a whole separate show just that we would do on childcare as a follow-up, because I think there, you know, there's also that idea of, you know, a large percentage of especially thought type of jobs that are now being done at home or, you know, in some amount of combination between an office and home. And so maybe that's not as big of an issue for Apple, right? I don't know. We'd have to sort of dig into that, I guess, and figure out. But I've had it both ways. I've worked where I've had, you know, my parents taking care of my children. I've had them at a very good preschool. I've had them at a childcare within my employer. So sort of run the gamut to now where, you know, I have a full-time job, but they're in summer anyway, they're here with me and, you know, I do get to see them and they're older. So it's not, you know, it's not like I'm sort of watching them every moment, but,
right.
But still being present and, you know, and seeing them in between meetings or calls or whatnot, it's so I don't know, it's definitely changing. Right. I think too, The other thing, I guess two things were popping into my mind, and hopefully you won't mind, but one of the totally unrelated to this, we had a conversation while you were here about, you know, do you buy boys dolls, right? Do boys need dolls? And I don't mean like G.I. Joe, and we were kind of joking about that, but actual baby dolls. And so when my son was little, he actually did have one doll, one baby doll.
Okay.
And it could have been because, you know, he was a twin and he has a twin sister and, you know, they were both into the American Girl bitty twins, right? Because it was a boy and girl twin. So I think that was probably part of it. But and it's not like he played with it all the time. But I remember back, I don't know if you remember this, but I've seen it so many times and I actually bought it for my kids. Back in the 70s, Marlo Thomas did a movie called Free to Be You and Me. And it's really about becoming a feminist or being a feminist, right? And it's about all the ways that little girls in the early 70s should be allowed to do things. And on the flip side, boys too, that might not be in the traditional gender stereotypes. So, for example, there's a whole little section, it's a little cartoon called William Wants a Doll. And it's all about a little boy who wants a doll and the dad and everyone's telling him no. And, you know, that men don't have babies and whatnot. And the grandma is the one is saying, look, you need to buy your sons a doll because it teaches them to be a better father when they grow up. They learn how to, right? They rock the baby. They hold the baby. They feed the baby, whatever. And so it's interesting that all these years later, 40 some odd years later, and it's still, you know, something that someone might pause about, like, well, do we buy boys dolls? Well, how else, if we have so many men who are now sharing in the parenting, CBS Sunday Morning recently had a clip called Young Dads and the Changing Look of Fatherhood. And it was talking about millennial dads. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, 80% of millennial dads are claiming they're the primary grocery shopper. And you're seeing sort of this move. It said Boston College did a study that 66% of dads think that childcare should be evenly divided, but only 29% get there as of this year.
Okay.
There's definitely a movement, I think, among men to be more into the childcare role. How in the world do we teach them if we're not, I mean, obviously buying a doll isn't the only way, but you know, it's those kinds of things. If your generation, my generation aren't thinking of these things, how are we teaching our sons to be better dads?
Yeah. And I think tying this back to sort of HR and the workplace and how that affects organizations, right? It used to be so much simpler, right? In the 1983 days, because guys like Michael Keaton all went to work, right? And we didn't care. The organization didn't have to care about their kids and their families and their work-life balance even all that much and how they were going to, like, you know, support them in their lives, because for the large majority of them, they had the mom at home taking care of all that stuff, right? And we didn't need to think about it. And now, whether it's male employees or female employees, we need to think about it lots, lots more as organizational leaders. And as you said earlier, I don't think we do. I don't think we think about it at all, or at least not enough. And
not enough, right.
It's a super interesting topic.
Steve, do you think, too, from a workplace perspective, and again, this is sort of way out there and we haven't talked about it, but do you think that organizations will start to see that the males entering the workforce are more nurturing than maybe previous generations? And I wonder, does that have an impact on employee engagement? Will that have an impact on, like, in terms of making it better? Will it positively impact the way that a male leader will develop and nurture and care for their teams? I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe that's been the missing link, because, I mean, just a week or so ago, I was reading something that said that, you know, we've been doing all of this focus on employee engagement for so long, and it really hasn't moved the needle in any significant way.
Yeah.
Right? We all know this, right? So we keep trying these new things. But I wonder, is it something so different like this? Is this the real innovation? Is that the population, that the males become a little bit more nurturing, and does that actually ultimately have a more positive impact on things like turnover, engagement, some of these things where maybe in the past it didn't, because, you know, again, big stereotype here, but male bosses tended to be more matter of fact, less nurturing, less caring, right? maybe that's the difference. I don't know. What do you think?
I think understanding how these societal changes influence or impact people, their expectations, their hopes, their behaviors. I think if you were really going to try to build and maintain like a world-class organization, particularly one of any kind of size at all, where some of these trends apply across, say, thousands of employees, I think it's really kind of a critical set of a type of understanding that we often don't think about. Like a couple of years ago, and I know we're going way into the weeds here, Trish, and I want to get back to Mr. Mom in a second, because there's another Mr. Mom point that, I want to make.
This is interesting, right?
We did a show, yeah, I love this stuff. We did a show several years ago now, called Chief Culture Officer, right?
Right.
And with Grant McCracken, who wrote the book. It's an outstanding book, by the way, Chief Culture Officer. And he's a cultural anthropologist. And the idea being, you can't really understand customers or your marketplace until you understand people and how they live and you know, what's influencing how they live. I'd say the same thing about, you can't really understand employees in general and people in general until you really get to know more or think more about some of these things that we're talking about, societal changes and influences or pressures or challenges in the way we're thinking about childcare and house care, you know, home, maintaining of the home and our relationships with our family and friends and how all those things are changing. All those things you carry with you, right, when you bring them to the organization, right? And I know this is a big, it's a big pill to swallow for, say, an HR leader who's tasked with recruiting for roles and keeping compliant and, making sure everybody's getting paid properly on time. Like, how is it her job to think about, you know, society? But, I mean, what McCracken argued in the book was that it absolutely is, and you should have someone in the organization doing that, right? And that's how you can best prepare and adjust to these changes. And it's just a really kind of interesting set of studies, I guess, in that area.
Well, I think we should try and talk to some of the people who are, you know, spearheading things like the Fatherhood Project, or, you know, where they're really measuring and trying to figure out how these changes in the way that men are fathering can impact the workforce. Because I think that at this point, it probably is just prediction, right? Mm-hmm. But it'd be definitely something for human resources leaders and other business leaders to keep an eye on, because I think we're going to see some huge impacts from, you know, the way that the society is changing and the way that men are participating, and you know, that could be a key thing to changing things like engagement and culture and turnover and things like that. So. Very interesting. See what Mr. Mom does for you.
It actually
brings up a whole different thought process. And you know what? I think too, before we get into the second topic, I love things like this where you take something that you think really doesn't have anything to do with the workforce or society in terms of how people work, and you can start digging in, and it really does.
Yeah.
It really brings up so many ideas.
Yeah, totally agree. Hey, look, quick reset. This is HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. Trish McFarland's with me. We are breaking down Mr. Mom and talking about what it means in our Workplace
Break
Moving Hall of Fame series and for our first episode. And hey, the other big theme, you know, workplace kind of theme in Mr. Mom smacks you right in the face in the second part of the movie for sure, which is how Carolyn, who's the mom, goes back to work at an advertising agency, and pretty much from her first day or her second day on the job, she's being sexually harassed by the owner of the company. And that's not joking. That's not a joking matter at all, even though it's sitting in a comedic movie. This is 1983, and it's kind of, you know, back then we can kind of, oh, wink, wink, laugh, laugh. Oh, you know, oh, the boss is being inappropriate again. But hey, this is not a joking matter at all. And the fact that it still happens every day, just read any tech website, TechCrunch, Mashable, you pick it, right? You will find a story pretty much every day about some other investor or tech company leader or some other, you know, company up to no good, right? And harassment being a huge, huge issue. Trish, it's kind of, I don't really feel comfortable talking about, you know, harassment in the workplace as a man, but but maybe you could just share your thoughts about how this shows up in the movie and kind of what it makes you think about today in the workplace.
Sure. Well, obviously you mentioned harassment, which is a very specific thing too. I think there are definitely those cases, like you mentioned, we're all familiar with, you know, recently with Uber, and I just saw, you know, one with a story that came out recently in the last week about all of the, you know, the VCs who were harassing, you know, the founder of Stitch Fix, for example, and some, you know, some other really high profile executive women who have to put up with this and keep silent. Look, that I worked in HR a long time. This happens all the time. The thing is for it to reach the level of truly being defined as harassment under the law, that is a little more unusual. You don't see that in every single workplace or, you know, as often as you might think. But what it did bring up for me is just sometimes the way that men speak to women, they don't even realize that they're being offensive,
right,
and that they're bordering on harassment. If it's not harassment, they're definitely making women uncomfortable in the workplace. Now, look, I will just be upfront. I never mind if someone wants to compliment me on my, you know, oh, your outfit looks pretty today, your hair looks nice. You know, I don't find that offensive. I take it as a compliment. I try, you know, I think there's a difference between, like, if you think about if someone, I always describe it as if someone says something to you and it just makes you feel icky on the inside, it's a very different thing than someone paying you a compliment, right? You know when you're being harassed or at least leading down that path, what someone's intent may be. But what I think is interesting in the workplace is that men don't always perceive what they're doing as creepy,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's really hard, having been in HR, that's really hard to define for an organization. And this movie, I think, just brings that right up, you know. Yeah, is it harassment when her boss, she comes out of her bathroom and he's let himself into her hotel room?
Yeah,
and,
I'd say so.
Yes, that's crossed the line. But, you know, it could be as simple as you're in a conference room in a meeting and the man sitting across from you is just staring at your chest, or, you know, and they don't even realize they're doing it sometimes, right? Or it's those types of things. And do women speak up every time that we are made to feel uncomfortable in a workplace? We don't. Because the risk still today of speaking up is often greater than not speaking up.
Yeah.
And that's what's sad. Like, no one knows how to fix this either. So,
yeah, I found some data on this from a couple of years ago from a Cosmopolitan magazine survey, which indicated about one third of women claim to have been, or at least reported that they have been sexually harassed at work. But then the other thing that was interesting is,
I think that's extremely low.
Yeah, well, it is. But here's the other interesting stat from this one. This is just one survey I plucked in. There's tons and tons of data on this. But this, in the same survey, 71% of the respondents said they didn't report the harassment. And there's, you know, we can get into all the reasons why, you know, won't be taken seriously. Maybe it didn't rise to the level of legal sexual harassment, as you said, Trish, but it was like kind of past the icky test, right? Mm-hmm. But 71% didn't report it. And of the people who did report the harassment, 29% who did report it, only 15% of those people, 15% of them said they thought the report was handled fairly, right? And again, that's their subjective determination of what's fair and not the legal determination,
right,
and all that. But still, it's still a huge issue. It's still a huge issue, still a big problem. I mean, and, you know, and then the fact that that movie's 35 years old, right? And, you know, it was treated, you know, a little bit kind of flippantly in the movie because it was a comedy, and no one would doubt that, you know, the boss, you know, breaking his way essentially into a co-worker's hotel room with a bottle of champagne to, you know, in the middle of the night, no one would argue that that's not harassment, and it's probably borderline illegal, right? But this more subtle forms of, like you talked about, Trish, the more subtle forms that happen, and even in culturally, maybe even not harassment so much, but just culturally how many organizations kind of, like, I can remember back when I was, you know, working in the late 80s to early 90s, like, all the bosses went out and played golf, right? They would blow off on a Thursday afternoon or a Friday afternoon to go play golf, and that was, and drink beers and smoke cigars, right? And I couldn't imagine, I didn't like golf, so I didn't go myself, but I couldn't imagine one of the women managers wanting to participate in that, right? I can't imagine it.
Wait, you just said, though, I could totally take offense to that, because why not? Why wouldn't a woman want to go play golf? You see what I mean? Like, it can happen so fast that you're just not included.
Maybe it was because there were so many more male managers at this place at the time, and maybe in lots of places still today. Like, but there wasn't an equivalent thing, right? There was never a, you know, that I saw in this organization where many of the,
right.
the women managers got together to go do something that you would typically associate with that females would like to do, and the men were excluded, right? That would never happen.
But I think
happen.
The point is that women are excluded to begin with because men think we don't want to be included.
Could be. That's another fair point. Yeah.
How, you know, what if I want to, I mean, I know a ton of women who can kick men's butts in golf, right? And so it's just a matter of those are the very things. It's not even an intentional way to leave women out, but it happens. And, you know, I have worked in predominantly male driven businesses for a long time, and some include women better than others, you know? Now, women need to speak up. We need to be able to say, look, we're just as interested in this, right? But we're still the minority, right? I literally just in the last couple of days heard that they were looking at the White House, for example, on the way they pay people. Did you see that where, you know, women are making 80 cents on the dollar working at the White House, you know, so that the average salary for a male is $105,000 and for women it was like $80,000. I mean, this is today, 2017, and we're still having to prove and fight for equal pay, for equal work.
And to not be harassed when you go to work and to just be allowed to go to work and not be made to feel icky or uncomfortable.
I've been in the workforce for, you know, over 20 years, and I can't even count, for, like, back to that study of 1 in 3 women saying they've been harassed. I think it's way higher because I can't even count how many times a man has, and I'm not talking about compliments, I'm talking about, like, brushed up against you in the elevator in a way that you know they didn't have to touch you, brushed up against you in the kitchen as they reach over to get, you know, coffee creamer as you're at the coffee machine, like they couldn't wait another moment longer for you to get out of the way. You know, it's those little things that men do. And how do you report that? And even if you go to HR and report that, how in the world is HR expected to investigate and actually do something about the man that does that? It's extremely hard. So I apologize. I'm getting very frustrated just thinking about it.
I'm getting mad too, because I say this, like, I don't like to be touched by anybody pretty much, like in any scenario at any time. And that's that little hang up I have maybe, but I can't imagine people who do that.
You know, John Doe in the elevator brushing up against you, but I can certainly imagine him brushing up against me. It happens so often that we don't even really notice it anymore sometimes. Women just, we're just raised and trained, oh, if a man does it, just move away.
Yeah.
Or just go somewhere else. Or if he's brushing up against you as you're getting your coffee, you know, or this may be silly. Have you ever had anyone smell you? I can't tell you. Like, I can be in a kitchen somewhere. This has happened in my career. And a man will walk up. And again, maybe they're reaching for the cup next to the coffee maker, whatever. And they don't even notice they do it. They're smelling you because you have perfume on. But it's like really clear. It's like, I never walk up to some man and smell them.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's weird.
And I'm talking about in their space, 12 inches away, within 12 inches, right?
We Trish, I can't believe how much we've dug up from Mr. Mom. I'm serious. Like, there's a whole range of other follow-ons we could do.
Have a whole, like, our whole show could just no longer be the HR Happy Hour show. It could just be, let's talk about Mr. Mom every week, and we could come up with a whole litany of things.
I know, because we didn't even get to some of the other things. I had a great corporate backstabbing story I could tell. We'll save that for another show. But, I mean, it's incredible. Anyway, this is a kind of a goofy, fun, lighthearted movie. Can we spoiler alert a 35-year-old movie? I don't know. But, you know, it kind of ends a little weirdly. And actually, some critics have kind of knocked it a little bit for the way it ended. But, because it kind of tied things up in a sitcom-y way, and it kind of undermined some of the message of the movie. But anyway, fascinating. And I think I guess it just proves the point that you said earlier. Maybe you said it to me, like, off the air, like, you can learn so much about sort of work by thinking about and doing things that are not work, right? Whether it's movies or books
so
or
important.
Going to a museum or playing with your kids or something. There's if you're thinking if you're open to sort of thinking about work and the workplace and how to make it better, there's you can find inspiration in lots of different places, I think, including silly old movies.
Steve, I would say too, since we do want to continue and do other movies, and we have sort of that list of the ones that we would expect, I would just say if you're still listening and you have any ideas of movies that maybe would not be so obvious, much like a Mr. Mom, in terms of a workplace movie or a movie that would have lessons that we could discuss for workplace, tweet us, email us, you know, call us, text us, smoke signals, whatever. Let us know. Movie suggestions on what we could watch and then talk about. And then if you'd like to be on the show and talk about it with us,
yeah,
let us know.
Awesome.
That too.
That'd be awesome.
I think this will be fun to really hit on some issues that we haven't covered in a long time or ever, and that really aren't even being talked about by anyone else either. So
I totally agree. Well, this was loads of fun, Trish. Thanks so much for taking my suggestion and trying out the Workplace Movie Hall of Fame idea.
Well, thanks for doing it. I think this will be fun and a good way to kind of take lighthearted things and then actually see how they apply in the work world. So
absolutely.
Good stuff, as always.
All right. So thanks for listening, everybody. Check out HRTechConference.com, of course, www.HRTechConference.com for everything there. Use the code STEVE200 for $200 off your registration there. And, of course, find us, www.h3hr.com, all things H3HR and HR Happy Hour there as well. Twitter, Facebook, all the places. Subscribe, finally, Stitcher, iTunes now is kind of Apple Podcasts, by the way, so that you see that out there. It's still the same Apple thing, but subscribe there and just let us know what you think at HR Happy Hour on Twitter. So, Trish, thank you so much.
We will talk
to you soon. And that's it from the HR Happy Hour. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.